Del 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your host Mike Dempsey and Jeff Lagerman.
Hey, welcome in everybody. Mike Dempsey, Jeff Lagerman, Fat Tony, Lauren Brooks here with you. It is Jaguars Today on this Tuesday, December 9th. Happy birthday to my beautiful bride, Heather Dempsey.
Happy birthday, Heather.
How about that? She's born 2 days after me.
So your birthday was a couple days ago.
It was a couple days ago.
Well, happy birthday to you, too.
It's too late, pal.
Well, I didn't know.
Get a head start on next year, okay?
If I would have known, I would have brought you a present on Sunday.
You're 363 days away from hitting that one. But she was born literally 2 days after me, same year. And she has one brother, I have one sister, and they were born 2 days apart. I don't know what it means, but I've been telling that story for about 25 years.
Got a little karma going on there, huh?
I don't know, maybe. It just it seems like a natural fit. People get freaked out when I tell them.
Good for you.
That's crazy.
Good for you.
Absolutely. Well, Jeff Lagerman, we come to you every Tuesday and we ask, was it as bad as it looked? Was it worse than it looked? Was it maybe better than it looked? And we'll discuss that coming up about every aspect of the Jags, but we wanted to start off with a comment from Gus Bradley yesterday, his press conference. And we'll hear more from the head coach as we move along. But he weighed in on the offensive line, and based on a lot of reaction that Tony and I have gotten, Jeff, I don't know about you, but on Twitter and on this program yesterday, people were not too pleased with the line play. They're ready, I think, for maybe to replace the whole lot of them at times, right? But this is what
Gus... The sky is falling.
Exactly. This is what Gus Bradley had to say about how the offensive line performed against the Houston Texans.
I thought the offensive line played pretty well. A sack. You know, Blake, one thing that I looked at last week, we ran a boot, and we said, hey, he's got to get rid of the ball to avoid a sack. Well, that happened twice on sprint passes and a boot, that he got rid of the ball, avoided a sack. If you look at the three sacks, one came on a bootleg. He made a good play. Hopefully we can try to get rid of that one, but it happened pretty quick. The other one was a sprint pass where Blake decided to run and slipped, and they got a sack on it. And then the other one, I believe our tackle got beat. So overall, and when you look at it across the board, they did a pretty good job. So I thought I was very pleased with the offensive line, that aspect, protection-wise.
Is Gus Bradley out of his ever-loving mind, Jeff, or after watching the film, do you agree with the head coach?
I mean, if you watched Jaguars All Access last night, in which, you know, that's determined, those statements are determined well before Gus Bradley's press conference, and I don't talk to Gus at all on Monday. I mean, I came to that same conclusion. I thought the offensive line took a step up, you know, and it's J.J. Watt, for heaven's sakes. You know, if you look at his three sacks, and we looked at them last night. Two of them were a result of one, Blake Bortles, on what Gus is referring to as a sprint pass. A sprint pass is a move the pocket protection. You're actually trying to move the entire pocket, and you're doing that to try to buy time and to get away from J.J. Watt. And in that instance, Toby Gerhart is chipping him, but then you have a safety that's blitzing inside of J.J. Watt. And as a running back, you have to block the most dangerous. So he picks up DJ Swearinger.
Is that the right pickup? That's the right pickup.
And because the pocket's moving, the ball's got to be gone. Well, that's the one that Blake Bortles slips on.
Right.
And then J.J. Watt taps him and then starts celebrating like he just had the greatest defensive play in the world, which I think rubs his teammates wrong in some ways. By the way, if you look at the reaction of his teammates. The other one was a naked bootleg, and J.J. Watt is the left defensive end. And Sam Young and Mercedes Lewis are lined up to the side of J.J. Watt. I think that Sam Young is expecting Mercedes to bump J.J. Watt down inside. In other words, chip him down to the inside before he releases. J.J. kind of vacates the area in a quick fashion so Mercedes doesn't get the chip. Now, is he supposed to completely sell out, or is he supposed to get out into his route and get turned around in a quick fashion where when J.J. Watt does get up the field, the ball can be thrown to him quickly?
Right.
I don't know the answer to that, but that's not on the offensive line. Now, the one that is on the offensive line is where Sam Young got beat for one play, but it's J.J. Watt. I mean, if J.J. Watt beats your offensive lineman one play, that's pretty good because, you know, we were just talking before the break, and you guys have watched J.J. Watt. J.J. Watt is typically a factor in pass rush on at least 40%. Of the snaps.
When you say a 40%. Factor, we're talking about getting a pressure, a quarterback hit, or a sack,
pressure,
any of those
sack,
things.
Hit, something.
Okay.
In some shape, way, or form, he is always a factor, 40% minimum. That's how good he is at times. Now, against Cincinnati, they minimized it. They did a really good job against him. Against Tennessee, his factor percentage might have been above 50. But in this game, I would say his factor percentage, as far as on offensive linemen, might have been 15.
So maybe half or a little less than half of what his typical production is.
Yeah.
In terms of, so overall, the offensive line did a pretty solid job. You said Luke Jokel, you told Tony and I a few minutes ago, got beat by Brooks Reed a couple of
times.
Take those two plays out, and I'm not saying you can't, but other than those two plays, you thought he played very well.
I thought he played very well. Now, when he had the opportunity to block J.J. Watt, Luke Jokel was exceptional. I mean, he did a very good job against J.J. Watt. Sam Young did some excellent things against J.J. Watt with the exception of that one play. Now, the rest of the offensive line, I thought Bowanko was good. I thought Beatles was good, although the running game still needs to get a little bit more room. But Brandon Linder was fantastic. I'm talking when J.J. Watt went down to say hello to Mr. Linder, Mr. Linder turned around and said hello back. I'm talking matched him power, matched him every time, stoned him. Bang, dead play. J.J. Watt's got to get his momentum restarted again. Exceptional. Exceptional.
All right, so with that, it appears that Blake gets hit a lot in the pocket after
releasing
the football.
How many times did we see Blake Bortles try to climb the pocket and run? What, five?
Mm-hmm. Handful, yeah.
Five times probably, handful. You know, four, five, six times to where he's trying to go up into the pocket, but up into the pocket running instead of sliding up and then still keeping his feet, you know, in a position to throw. I think a lot of that in that game, as far as the pressures or the appeared pressure, was on the quarterback.
Okay.
Because the quarterback didn't stay where he needed to stay.
So he should have been more content to stay in the pocket or climb the pocket a little bit, but looking to throw from that position.
That's right.
All right, so
is it a bit of a step in the right direction? It's felt with Blake Bortles like when he's escaping pressure, he's always doing it to the outside. Like, he hasn't been willing to really step into the pocket a whole lot.
Well, that's what he did this game.
Right. So if he's...
But here's the thing, Ted. I kind of know what you're getting at, and was it a step in the right direction for Blake Bortles? You remember the first couple games that he played? You know, we were talking the Indianapolis game, the San Diego game, And we had talked a while ago about how he looked like he was playing carefree and had the attitude, I'm just going to let it rip. You started to see that again out of him. Now, was it all good? No. You know, but you started to see the signs of he wanted to be an athlete again at the quarterback position. I'm not talking about turning into the next Michael Vick, but to allow his athleticism to play the game. And that was positive. Now, the negatives were... He had a couple guys that he missed, you know, that were seemed to be kind of routine throws. Mechanics weren't great. But he had four drops. I mean, I'm talking four easy drops.
Yep.
Right.
Clay Harbor, Cecil Shorts, you know, and those were 20-plus yard gains. Denard Robinson had two. One of them should have been caught. I mean, period, should have been caught. The other one was, you know, maybe not.
Well, what did Gus say? Five or six? What did he say the total
number
was?
Number of drops? I don't.
So it's right in that ballpark. That's a high number.
It's a high number.
For one game.
And what did he complete percentage?
20 of 39.
That's pretty good.
I mean, you bump that up to, say, 25.
25 of 39?
Right.
Pretty good. You know, but the yards per attempt were down.
Right.
You know, it was a little over five. It's not the number you're looking for.
No.
You know, so... But I thought overall for the offensive line, step in the right direction. Blake Bortles, signs of in the right direction, but production not where it needed to be.
We'll talk about it more as we go along. Jeff Logman here with us for the next 2 hours. If you'd like to get in, 641-1010. Any questions, doesn't have to be about the offensive line, obviously, but Jaguar football on the table when Loggy is in the house today. The fan feedback spotlight question today, brought to you by the Tom Bush family of dealerships, is one that we've already got an interesting variety of responses to on Twitter. We asked you, of the three Heisman Trophy finalists that were announced yesterday, Marcus Mariota, Melvin Gordon, and Amari Cooper, quarterback, running back, wide receiver, which one of those players would help the Jaguars the most in 2015? And you're thinking, oh, we've got a quarterback. Trust me, the narrative will arise, the discussion will arise in the offseason in a certain segment. I'm not saying it's anywhere near the realm of possibility or realism, but you feel free to weigh in with your own thoughts. We've already had an interesting response that picked Mariota for a particular reason, and we'll discuss that as we go along today. Tweet us at MD_1010XL, at logs56, L-O-G-S, 5-6, at 1010XL, Fat Tony, at 1010XL, Lauren, as well. Jaguars today just getting rolling. Your calls welcome. We'll hear from the head coach talking with Jeff Logman for the next couple of hours right here on 1010XL 92.5 FM. Hi, this is my favorite song. Never heard it before. Widespread Panic. This is Dying Man. I'm going to guess. I nailed it yesterday. Yesterday was too easy. All right, yesterday's theme. Our question yesterday was, do you think this Jaguar team right now is better, the same, or worse than it was at the same point last year, 3 weeks ago? Keep in mind, last year they had just won their fourth game in 5 weeks. Okay, but whatever. It doesn't mean that just because your record's better, you're a better team. How would you have answered that, Jeff? Better, the same, or worse? I'm not talking about potential. I'm talking about right now. Would this team fare well against last year's team if they went head-to-head?
No.
You don't think?
No, I mean, there's a chance. It depends on how many takeaways the defense gets. I mean, right now, that's how this team is going to make its living. You know, winning football games is the defense giving the offense more opportunities, because right now the offense just, they can't score points.
Right.
You know, they're just so young. The production's not there. The consistency's not there. And they've got a long way to go on offense.
So you would even say worse than necessary. I mean, it sounds like.
Well, I mean, if you look at the numbers, I mean, it's pretty obvious.
Okay. I said about the same, because I think the defense is a little bit better. You know, certainly
defense is better,
making more plays.
The defense is definitely better,
and the offense is a little worse.
But the offense is worse. But it's worse in the fact that, you know, you said don't take into account potential.
Yeah, right. It could be much better next year, but that's not where they're at right now.
It could be
a
lot better next year.
And people did answer, and they said we think they're better because they have a better base of talent, and therefore they're better positioned for the future. And that's fine.
Yes.
But just in terms of competitiveness right now, which I think is funny that you would, I mean, that's your answer, and I don't think it's funny that you say that. I think we just got this tweet. I love this. People just, hey, whatever. God bless America. At Boraquato, Jags fanatic, frequent tweeter, said he's listening to the show, and if you listen to Jeff Logman, you'd think the Jags have a Super Bowl contending team. Hashtag, let's keep it real. Hashtag, no homer. I don't know what he's hearing. I really don't. I mean, and that's the thing. I knew the offensive line, saying the offensive line played well, not without its mistakes, but played well, would be a very unpopular opinion today.
That's fine.
Oh, I know. Yeah. I know it doesn't bother you. That's why I've always, you know, in the immediate aftermath of a game in particular, very tough for me to judge offensive line play. I will always try to defer to you when you watch the film and know what to look for a lot more than I would. But to each your own. You're welcome to your opinion on that. Now, yesterday, Lawrence started with you better you bet, right? Which, you know, fit the theme of better, worse, or the same. Mm-hmm. So today, widespread panic, dying man. I'm going to guess she's voting for the wide receiver on today's question of the day between.
See, now you know how I think. It makes it so much easier.
I'm 2 for 2 right
you
out
are.
Of the gates this week, and I ruined everyone's day now because they don't get to play along with the home version of the. The Jaguars.
No, you know, I've run into people over the last few weeks in the parking lot who tell me at Jags games that they have no idea what my music themes are. So I think it's actually better that you guess it right out the
gate. Is it right? All right.
I think
There you go. You've run into a lot of interesting people in the parking lot, actually.
That's to say the least.
I wish I could hang out in the parking lot.
It's kind of the nature of
You know, I can bring you along come Thursday night, Jeff.
We've only got one more to go. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Maybe we should tailgate. Should I bring the hibachi? What
the
should
hibachi?
We do?
You got a little portable grill?
Sure. I could bring a little
Jeff
hibachi.
Brings the meat. You bring the
apparatus. Do a little post-game tailgating?
Post-game?
Post-game.
I mean, we do pre-game. I mean, it's going to have to start real early.
Yeah, well.
I'm there.
How do you feel about that?
I mean, I'm here till noon anyway.
No, but I want to see. I want to hang out in the parking lot, right? Have Bloody Marys. And,
mm-hmm.
I know.
You know.
I know.
As long as you'll control yourself, then I'll interview you.
How will that play on the broadcast?
Probably not well.
Not so well. All right. There you have it. We'll see. I imagine there'll be a lot of – I'm hoping it'll be a good scene for tailgating. Final game of the year regardless.
What was the guy that tweeted said I was a homer?
Yes.
Maybe I should change it and I'll start drinking teal.
Kool-Aid.
Drink the teal margaritas in the morning,
right?
Or something, you know,
because you got to. Well, I mean, if you're the homer, right, you got to drink the Kool-Aid.
Yeah,
the teal Kool-Aid. There you have it. All right.
Sounds good to me.
You can weigh in again. Tweet us at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony, at 1010XL Lauren, at Logs56 Logs56. If you want to weigh in on any aspect, certainly of the Jacksonville Jaguars, but certainly the question of the day: which of the three Heisman finalists, Mariota, Gordon, Cooper, would help this team more? Let's get some phone calls started today. Your gateway to talk with Jeff Logman is right here at 641-1010, and we'll start with James. First up on this Tuesday morning. Good morning, James. How are you?
Good morning, guys. Love the show. Long time Jags fan. Just had a quick question for Jeff. The culture that's being created with the Jaguars now with this process, young and we can't score, I just kind of feel like the word I never hear Coach Bradley say is, we need to win. And I think we've almost created a culture of, well, we told you we're young. We told you we're going to throw picks. And I look at the talent. I understand you need the great players. But how is it that, let's take the Raiders last week. They lit up a pretty good team with offense. They didn't need a lot of fumbles. I'm just waiting for us to turn that corner and set the bar a little bit higher. I think the guys are doing exactly what the coaching staff is telling them to do. It's a process. You're going to make mistakes. I'd just like to hear your thoughts on that.
Well, I think the one thing, too, that you got to remember is that when Gus talks to the media, I think what he says to the media and then what he demands out of his players might be different. You know, as a head coach, the last thing in the world that you want to do is to go in there and be self-serving and talk to the media and start singling out, well, he's got to get better. That wasn't good enough. You know, what purpose does that serve? You know, are you in the corner of your players, or are you trying to be self-serving and make yourself look better to the fans? Now, what Gus Bradley demands or expects or says to his players on the practice field or privately may be totally different. You know, perfect example is bring up Jay Gruden. I mean, Jay Gruden basically hung out his quarterback, RG3.
Totally hung him out.
Totally hung him out. Okay. What did that accomplish? Is it going to make his team better? Is it going to make RG3 better?
Well, in that particular case, not to digress too much, I wonder if he felt
like...
I'm
not an RG3 fan now.
Right, but I wonder if he felt like he had been coddled, that nobody would give him that everything had been RG3's great, 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 and they're blowing sunshine at him the whole time, and that maybe he needed a little bit of tough love and maybe that public rebuke. Because, you know, you hear the whispers that his teammates think that this guy is much more concerned with endorsements than he is with working hard to become the best quarterback. So I don't know about that situation in particular, but it doesn't seem to have benefited the Redskins in any tangible way.
No, it's not going to make RG3 a better player. I think it's going to make RG3 resent Jay Gruden. But, you know, it made the fans feel better, you know, because they're like, yeah, he's demanding more.
Right.
You know, but in reality, does it really help? I don't know that. The whole culture of we believe in victory, you know, because I've read up on all this stuff. You know, I mean, I'm a strong believer in what Gus is talking about, but I also believe that there's also other ways to help kind of along the way as well. But his belief in believing in victory, and victory is not necessarily a win, because you have such a young team. If you gauge or allow them to gauge their self-worth off of wins and losses, what kind of positive feedback are they ever going to achieve early on in the stages of building a team? You know, so he wants them to take great pride in accomplishing certain objectives along the way to where they get better individually, to where eventually wins come, to where the wins are secondary. Getting better individually, getting better as a team is more important than winning. Because I think what that does is allow players to have something tangible that they can touch, that they can grasp, and that they can achieve. But to expect an offense that's essentially playing six rookies or seven rookies at times, to expect them to go out and compete against teams that have a higher level of talent and a higher level of experience can be unrealistic. So I think it's almost setting goals in a way, but not having the goals, the ultimate goal, be the only thing, and that's winning.
But for James's standpoint, just to kind of dovetail on his question, are you setting up an environment where the players say, well, it doesn't really matter then if we get the win or the loss, as long as we do some of these individual things?
No, trust me, they know what the environment is.
Okay.
I mean, because at the end of the day, everybody knows in the National Football League, it's about winning.
I get that, but you know, I understand James' question from a fan perspective.
Absolutely.
That's what you hear as, not only from Gus, but the players either are smart enough to parrot it or they buy into it 100%, because you hear it from all these guys, Tony, right? Everyone,
no, you do.
Everyone who comes in here, everyone we talk to before and after games is the same way. You know, it's about the process. It's about the steps to getting better as a football team, and then the wins will come if you do all these steps.
Well, see, Gus is a big believer in competition within. You know, guys that are self-motivated, guys that want to be elite players that don't need external motivation. I'm a big believer in that. Yeah, that's great. But in some cases, I believe that external motivation can be a good thing. And the more talent that you acquire on this football team, the more external motivation that you're going to have, and the more options you would have as a coach. Just like earlier in the year when you had issues in the secondary, what did you do? Well, you replace guys. You cut guys. You know, that's part of the deal. That's external motivation. But you got to be able to have both. And the more talent that this team assembles, the more experience that this team is able to assemble, the more external motivation that's going to come naturally that it will have. Because sooner or later, if the production is still not there, you're going to have to find players that are going to give you more. And right now, they're playing the best options that they have. Soon, they'll have more talent, they'll have more options, and the expectations go up.
And kind of another angle on that young team theme that we hear a lot from the fans and the frustration that they're feeling. Look, and I understand this as well. You can understand that a bunch of young players are going to make a bunch of mistakes and that it's going to take them a while to learn to play the game. But Jeff, in the end, are they making enough positive plays? Are they taking enough steps forward to feel good about the young core of talent on this team? You're okay with the mistakes as long as they're taking those steps as well, are they?
Well, I think in some cases they are, but they're not taking enough.
Okay.
I mean, you want them to take more. You want, you know, an offense to be able to, you know, the quarterback to start showing, okay, here's the reason why we think he's getting better. And it's always better to see it. You know, and I'm talking about the common fan to see it. I mean, there's always ways that you can evaluate film and see that, oh, that's so much better than what it was the week before. But a lot of times, to an untrained eye, to where you can't sit there and break down every play.
You want touchdowns.
It's hard to see.
You want completions. Right. You want
absolutely
the numbers that
you want
that
yards
validate.
Per attempt. At the end of the day, look at yards per attempt, quarterback rating, touchdown interception ratio, completion percentage. All of those things to start to show up. And you're not seeing it yet. You're starting to see kind of up and down, and it's up and down at a low level. But that's what you signed up for. You know, when you committed to the young offense, that's what you got. Now you got to fight through it.
641-1010 if you'd like to get on board. Darren is next up on Jaguars Today this morning. Hello, Darren. How are you?
Hey, good morning, fellas. How you guys doing?
Good. What's up, man?
I might be a naive, optimistic Jaguars fan, but I'm blaming the Jaguars' loss this Sunday on the rain. But my real point of calling was I wanted to ask Jeff. You know, he said about the self-worth. When does the self-worth, I guess, become or is actually calculated in wins? Because no matter, you know, how much you, no matter how many times we say, okay, you know, this guy did something that was really good, you, we're going to have to start at one point go to getting wins, you know? So when did you start saying, okay, your self-worth is actually defined by wins? And I'm going to take it off the air with that.
All right. Thank you, Darren.
Next year.
It's got to be 2015. Right?
I mean, next year you got to start to see some wins.
Yeah.
You know.
And what that number is, I don't know if you can define
there's
it.
There's only one person that knows what that number is.
That's Shai Khan.
That's right.
Right. He's whatever is going to be acceptable to the head man. But you're going to have to win significantly more games, in my opinion.
Yeah, and you know, what is significant? I don't know the answer to that. But, I mean, for
well,
me.
Well, let's see what they end up with this year.
Yeah.
That
I mean, for me, you know, I want to see next year competitive. Competitive every week, offensive production, you know, 20 points plus a game, you know, averaging, You know, this year they're at, what are they at now? Points a game. 14?
Somewhere.
Probably, because they've only broken 17 a handful of times.
Yeah. You know, so 14 points a game, you know, next year jump it, bump it up, bump it up. You know, see, have a quarterback that you feel good about calling certain plays. You know, an offensive line that's consistent, that you expect more things out of. You know, I mean, that, look, this year when they committed, and I remember it was all of a sudden, okay, you committed to Blake Bortles. I'm like, okay, he's because I was one of the guys that said originally, let's stick with Chad Henne. But then after I saw Blake Bortles in the preseason, I'm like, look, this guy makes people better. Let him play. And I thought that we saw a lot of that in the first couple weeks, and then reality set in. You know, the struggles of a young quarterback. You know, and people, you know, points to the Oakland Raiders. Well, the Oakland Raiders had one good game, and then all of a sudden it feels all fine and dandy. I mean, it's just like the Giants game last week.
The week before, they were miserable.
Terrible.
They were miserable, but they did have a pretty big performance against what's a decent defense.
Are they?
Well, decent. I didn't say great.
Yeah.
Defense, but they still get some players on that side of the football.
They do. The Smiths are great players.
Right, and they were very quiet this week. 15.3 points per game. I think it's 199 points they've scored in 13 games. So just a tick over two touchdowns a week. That's not getting it done in the National Football
League. Well, and that does factor in defensive scores there.
That does, right, and that includes defensive scores, right? So offense, probably, you're probably right. It's probably below 14, I would imagine. Yeah, because they've scored a couple at least, and you knock those off, and that would probably drop you right around that 14-point mark. All right, 641-1010. We'll continue to take your calls coming up here on Jaguars Today. We'll also hear more from Gus Bradley yesterday, speaking with the media day after when he had a chance to assess some of the film and break down what happened against the Houston Texans on Sunday. Mike Dempsey, Jeff Loggeman, Fat Tony, Lauren Brooks here with you on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. Oh, there she goes, straight to Alice Cooper. Not even trying to hide it right now for people who may be covering their ears earlier for the home version of Jaguars Today. The theme today dovetails with the question of the day, which asks you as Jaguar fans, which of the three Heisman finalists would be the most help to the Jacksonville Jaguars next year? Marcus Mariota, Melvin Gordon, and Amari Cooper. And you can see where Lauren Brooks is voting right now with Alice Cooper's I'm 18 right there. 641-1010 if you'd like to get on board. Mike Dempsey, Jeff Loggeman, Fat Tony here with you live at Everbank Field in the Jacksonville Orthopedic Institute studios. Coming up, we will hear from your head coach, Gus Bradley, but we got phone lines jammed up waiting to talk to Loggy, so let's get back to it. Tony, good morning. You're on Jaguars Today. What can we do for you?
Good morning, fellas. How are we doing this morning?
Excellent.
My question for you guys is, I've been a Jaguar fan since the beginning of time, since 95. And year after year, we continue to hear the same thing. Be patient. Be patient. We're developing. We're developing. Now, don't get me wrong. If we go 0-16 or 16-0, I'm going to stick by my guys. I'm a diehard. I bleed black and teal. But as a diehard Jaguar fan like myself, what advice can you give us, or what can you say to keep us just motivated or keep believing? Because it's kind of frustrating year after year you continue to hear the same thing, and eventually you want to see W's and not so many L's.
Yeah, and see, that's I understand that, because, I mean, it's no different for me. I mean, you've had so many years of, okay, they're building. Well, then, building to what?
Right.
You know, you're not seeing the
wins
and losses.
Gene Smith was building, right?
Yeah, Gene Smith was building. You know, Shaq Harris was building.
Right. Although Shaq was a little there. Shaq, I think, you know, 2007, they felt coming out of that they were a piece or two away.
And then they made the ultimate mistake.
Trading all his picks and getting Derek
Absolutely.
Harvey. Yeah.
Derek Harvey, Quentin Groves.
Quentin Groves didn't pay off.
You know, and it crushed
At least
them.
Quentin Groves has had he's played a lot. You know what I mean? He's had a decent career in the NFL, but he was not not an impact player.
Well, when every 3 years you're tearing out the foundation to start building again, like the fans, you totally get their frustration.
So sure. What would you tell this guy, Jeff?
What I would tell anybody, and what I kind of hang my hat on, because, you know, I'm trying to stay positive too, is that, you know, I'm looking at individuals. I'm looking at individual players, the building blocks of this franchise, and I'm liking what I'm seeing. You know, and so we can go individually across the board. I mean, you look at the offense, you've got two young wide receivers that have shown signs at a very early age. I mean, a lot of wide receivers, Reggie Wayne, perfect example. In his first year, many people labeled him a bust. And Reggie Wayne all of a sudden now is a Hall of Fame candidate. You know, Marquise Lee, Allen Robinson. I think those are two excellent, excellent players. And they're going to be really good in the future. Allen Hurns is a very solid, dependable, serviceable wide receiver. Very good number three. So I feel good about those guys. But just remember where they are. They're rookies. Rookies. And wide receivers, how many teams in the National Football League have had first-round draft pick wide receivers and after the first year went, it ain't going to happen. Not going to happen. These guys aren't worth anything.
The Jags have done that a couple of times.
But, I mean, these guys got tangible results.
I hear you.
I mean, Allen Robinson was one of the best rookies in the National Football League at the wide receiver position prior to the injury. In the last 3 weeks, Marquise Lee might be the best in the last 3 weeks with 194 yards receiving. You know, look at
I would say Allen Beckham Jr. may have an argument with him on that one.
Hurns has got 6 touchdowns for a rookie. His yards per reception is way up.
Right.
I like that. I mean, Bowanko, I think, is the center of the future. Give him time to develop physically, mentally. I thought this year for him, 6th-round draft pick to get a starting center in the 6th round. You look at the centers that were drafted above him, I think he's playing better than any of them. Brandon Linder at right guard is a plug-and-play, high-level player right now. Luke Jokel, the biggest thing with Luke Jokel is the label. 2nd overall pick. Okay, that's the biggest thing with him. But he's still a rookie. He's still going through some growing pains. He has to get better. There's no question about it. But, you know, if you watch him in the running game, he's exceptional in the running game. Excellent blocker. He has to learn to be better in pass protection, and that will come. And he's had moments that he's been exceptional.
Well, then why can't we run the football?
Who's running the ball?
Denard Robinson.
Well, Denard Robinson has been okay the last, you know, he had a 4-week stretch where he was really good.
He had a full, right, but it seems to have regressed from that point.
No, there's no doubt.
So, I mean,
is he the answer?
I don't know.
I don't know either.
Okay.
I don't know that either.
All right.
He has to be better. The offensive line has
to be
better.
Okay, so that's why I'm asking. That's part of the answer. Denard Robinson hasn't played as well since that 4-game stretch.
No, but part of it is, too, is that you're not playing the game to where a running back can continue to be a factor. Points have been at a premium. You're behind in games. The running game is no longer something that you go to with confidence all the time. You know, so when the scores and the production offensively and the passing game gets better, the running game will kind of follow suit. You know, the biggest thing that's slowing this football team down right now is a young, inexperienced offensive line with a young, inexperienced quarterback. You know, but hey, look. That's what happens when you play a young quarterback that you wanted to originally sit for the year and let him learn. Part of the deal. You know, so next year, the greatest improvement that this team can make from this year to next year is the play of the quarterback. You know, but I'm not going to criticize Blake Bortles in high fashion right now because I know what those guys are expected to do and how much it is to be able to compete at a high level when you have so many other young components around that position alone. I mean, look at Ben Roethlisberger's Super Bowl season in his rookie year. How much did he have to contribute to that team? Number one defense, one of the top rushing teams in the league.
Don't turn it over.
Just don't turn it over, Ben. We'll be okay.
Right.
You know, so it's just going to take time. And if the quarterback elevates his play, and I believe we had him in here last week, and I firmly believe that he has the mental makeup to be able to fight through what he's dealing with right now, that next year when his level of play goes up, it will be dramatic next year for this team when everybody else gets experience around him as well.
641-1010, let's go back to the phones. Tam, you're next up on Jaguars Today. Good morning.
Hey, Mike. Hey, Jeff.
What's up?
How you guys doing?
Good.
I just wanted to make a comment. What kind of money does J.J. Watt make?
He signed a new deal in the offseason, a 6-year extension. And I don't know the numbers, but I want to say it was in the $15 to $18 million a year range.
Okay. So you got a guy $15-$18 million range. You both know what the Oklahoma drill is. What's Luke and Sam Young making?
whatever.
Low level stuff. What's the point?
Well, the point is, if you're doing an Oklahoma drill on every single play, which pretty much is what happens at the NFL level, and Jeff knows that, who's going to win 99% of the time? And when he's in the backfield, and he's winning 99% of the time, the reason we were 13-10, we put the ball out quickly so that he wasn't raising havoc the whole game. Then in the second half, they started making adjustments. And the adjustments were right in his favor, and he was crushing us. You know, no fault of Luke. He's a second year guy. Sam's a backup guy. You know, JJ Watt's going to win that and create havoc every single time.
JJ Watt in the one-on-one situations against Sam Young and Luke Jokel won one time.
Right, one-on-ones, right. So, yeah. I mean, I don't know if you heard you in the beginning of the show.
I guess not.
Yeah.
He won one time.
J.J. Watt, based on your analysis of the film, his level of production impacting plays on passing plays was well below his typical output.
Way
this
below.
Year. So,
but, I mean, that's not – I mean, you see three sacks. You see the stat sheet. You see J.J. shaking his finger, you know, tapping Blake Bortles down when he slips on the grass or on a bootleg. And that happens, but don't parlay that into J.J. Watt abused Sam Young and J.J. Watt beat up Luke Jokel. That's not the case.
$16.6 million a year, just if you're curious.
I figured it was right 15 to 18.
I could get by on that.
He's a great player.
I could take I'd take that pay cut, and I think I could still get by on that. I'd tighten up my belt a little bit, Tony.
Yeah, I'd be fine.
$16.6 million per year, I could do that. All right, we've got coming up more of your phone calls. We got this date in football history, the Honda drive around the NFL, and we'll hear from Gus Bradley as well. Mike Dempsey, Jeff Logman, Fat Tony, Lauren Brooks, Jaguars today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
And now, this date in football history.
All right, this date in football history, December 9th, 1984. I was 10th grade. And Eric Dickerson. What's that?
What year?
84.
Okay.
What were you doing in 84?
I was a senior in high school playing football in the fall.
You were a senior in high school?
Yeah, I graduated in 85.
You did?
Yeah.
The spring of 85. So you're only...
No, I graduated spring of 85. Okay.
Isn't that what I just said? I could have sworn
it
I just
was.
Said
I thought you were 85. About to go into a comedy sketch. Goes, I didn't know what was happening.
Who's on first? So what are you, 47-ish?
Yeah.
All right.
47.
All right. For some reason, I thought you were like 44-ish. You're an old man.
Well, I look 44.
That must be, obviously. But on this date, when Jeff was a senior, and I guess 84, that's right, December of 84, I was a junior in high school. Good call, because I graduated in 86, so I'm only a year behind you. Eric Dickerson, meanwhile, was in the National Football League, and he was running for 215 yards in a 27-16 win over the Houston Oilers at the time. And what that did was it moved him past O.J. Simpson's single-season mark of 2003 rushing yards. He would go on, Dickerson would, to finish the year with 21.05.
He was with the Rams still then.
That is correct.
Now, because when I got in the National Football League, he was with the Colts. And I'll never forget, we had a home game against the Colts in New York. And it was a goal line play, and I'm the outside linebacker my rookie year. And I come down the line of scrimmage, and I've got a free, clean shot on Eric Dickerson, and I'm gonna kill him. I mean, I'm gonna blow him up like he's never been blown up before. And all I remember is making contact, and then everything went blurry. And then when I looked up, he's standing in the end zone, spiking the ball. He ran right through me like I was nothing.
He's one of the all-time best. Obviously, he was big. He had power speed combo. I thought he was one of the smartest running backs because he wore every pad that was legally allowed to, you know, where he had the neck roll, which never did anything, you know, but he had elbow, he had the goggles, the elbow pads, he had everything.
You remember Blake Bortles when he was talking about how when he was in college, he'd sit on the couch and he'd sit there and critique guys in the NFL and go,
yes,
I can do that.
Right.
I remember watching Eric Dickerson in college and sitting there going, that guy runs so upright, I would love to have a shot at
him.
I'll
drill this guy.
I would kill him.
He won't put me on my back. I remember back in high school days, my best friend was a Washington fan. So, you know, as is my nature, I was big anti-Washington guy back then. So the Redskins were playing the Rams in the playoffs. You remember this play?
What year?
Oh, boy. This had to be right around mid-80s, right around this time, like 85, maybe something like that.
One of their Super Bowl runs.
And right. And Dickerson breaks one up the middle. Free and clear, he is gone.
Oh, no, he's not gone.
And here comes all Darryl of a sudden Green. You see Darryl Green start – and he's got like a – I don't know. I in my mind's eye, it's like a 30-yard lead on him because Green was probably coming up to the line of scrimmage and Dickerson's full blast the other way. Darryl Green turns around and walks him down. It wasn't even – it wasn't like he caught him in the last 5 yards either. It was like here's this guy running so fast and here's this meteor flying across the screen. Darryl Green.
Kind of like what Marquise Lee did in London, running down the defensive back.
Yes.
Even though the play was called back because of a penalty.
Right.
But that same exact kind of look.
That burst where that guy, it's almost like, Tony, it's like a Tecmo Bowl thing, right? Where you got that one player that it's just unfair to have that guy out on the field. What a racer.
Last night on Jaguars All Access, I asked Marquise Lee what he ran the 40 in at the combine. Because, when you watch him play the game, he plays the game with speed that it just seems unmatched.
Correct.
And he said he ran a 4.5. But Jimmy Smith, when he was here, Jimmy Smith's best 40 time was like a 4.5. But Jimmy Smith clearly didn't play like he ran a 4.5.
Right.
He played like he ran a sub 4.4 or 4.4 even. Some guys have that ability because remember, you're not wearing track shoes, you're wearing football gear, and it's on grass, it's a little different.
Yeah.
Some guys can make it be faster make themselves be faster than what they would time at.
How about this for a pair of birthdays on December 9th, 1938, 1942, respectively? Would you start your all-time defense maybe with Deacon Jones and Dick Butkus?
In a minute.
Right? Come on.
Ooh. In a minute.
Deacon Jones will tell you he had 700 sacks if he were still with us.
One of the most colorful players to ever play.
Isn't he? He was one of my favorite guys to interview every year the Super Bowl. And
love listening to
him.
It
was a sad day when he passed away. Deacon was he would still talk smack like he could go out there and show J.J. Watt how to do it today. He was fantastic.
I love listening to him talk about the head slap.
Oh, yeah. That's what he was known for, right?
Yeah.
He'll ear hole you. And, now he looks at today's game, he's like, all right, so Telvin Smith hit Andre Johnson helmet right in the ear hole. So what?
Yeah, by the way, going to that play, what can Telvin Smith do?
Right. But it's like Gus said, he probably couldn't have done anything else, but at the same time, you got to call that penalty under today's game.
Just like the call on Blake Bortles to where Brooks Reed and Brian Cushing came in and Brooks Reed made contact right to the head of Blake Bortles.
Sure.
But there also was a couple missed calls, and that J.J. Watt against the Tennessee Titans a week before took out Mettenberger. That should have been a penalized play. The hit on Blake Bortles this past game where he takes 2.5 steps and dives at his legs, that should have been a penalty.
Oh, that definitely. Two and a half steps and, shouldn't be able to touch a guy after that. But
yeah, we're gonna look at some of that on Film Room Friday, Jaguars.com, because I call it the Bruce Smith syndrome.
Where the star gets away with it?
Doggone right.
Right. All right. We need Baselli out there to teach him a lesson. This date in football history brought to you by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry. If you're in the market for a family dentist, maybe you need cosmetic work done, maybe you or a loved one could use the Stop Snoring Mouth Guard. Custom fit, 620-9225. Dr. McCall, online at jamesjmccall.com for a complete list of comprehensive care services. That is this date in football history.
Now, the Honda Drive around the NFL, brought to you by your Jacksonville area Honda dealers.
Eric Berry was placed on the non-football injury list by the Kansas City Chiefs a couple weeks ago after a mass was found in his chest. Berry confirmed yesterday that it is Hodgkin lymphoma. He released the following statement yesterday through the team, quote, "My family and I are very grateful for the amount of support we have received over the last couple of weeks. I can't tell you how much I appreciate all the words of encouragement, the blessings, and the well wishes. I want to thank the Emory University School of Medicine, along with Dr. Flowers and his team, for all their hard work and effort in diagnosing and creating a plan for me to battle this thing. I will embrace this process and attack it the same way I do everything else in life. God has more than prepared me for it. For everyone sharing similar struggles, I'm praying for you and keep fighting," end quote. Cincinnati head coach Marvin Lewis went on WLWAM yesterday to talk about his team's upcoming matchup with the Cleveland Browns. Here's a bit of how that interview went down. Question for Coach: does the Browns quarterback uncertainty impact your preparation in any way this week? Answer: no, it doesn't. It doesn't at all. Question: is it going to be running the same routes with receivers? And yeah, that's right. You'll get a little more movement if Mantel is the quarterback because the thing they did against Buffalo. But other than that, no, that doesn't impact you at all. You've got to defend the offense. You don't defend the player, particularly a midget. When referring to Johnny Manziel.
He said that?
He said it.
Wow.
In a radio interview.
Little people are up in arms right now.
I love Marvin.
By
the way, he is one of the great guys in the National Football League. I mean, if you went and you talked to Marvin Lewis on the street, you know, you went, hey, Marvin, you know, nice to meet you. He is gracious. He is just as nice as of a guy that you would ever meet.
But I'm not kidding you. Like, they'll be little people, because they don't like the term midget.
Oh, I know.
They are seriously tweaked by that in our modern society.
He's almost 6 feet tall, isn't he?
Manziel?
Yeah.
Yeah, but he looks like a short.
He's like 5'11 or something like
that. By NFL quarterback standards, he's a shorter fellow.
Did you see that Fox was pumping up Johnny Manziel mumbling on the sideline after Brian Hoyer missed a deep ball to Josh Gordon?
I did not see that.
Oh, yeah. Fox is getting some play out of that.
Well, look, most people feel it's done. He's going to play this week. And, you know, who was it last time? Maybe it was Mortensen was pointing out. He said, look, Hoyer, he showed one. Hoyer put a dime on this guy, dropped it, you know, late in the game. Gave Gordon a chance to make a play on a ball up the sideline, which would have put him either in or close to field goal position to win the game, you know, on the last drive. Gordon can't come up with the ball. Tough catch, but one that a Pro Bowl receiver,
Josh Gordon,
is supposed to make.
Yeah.
Right. So, you know, but hey, that, you know, where it's going. When you draft the quarterback in the first round, you're going to have to play exceptionally well to hold the guy off.
Can you imagine if Chad Henne had started? I mean, and the results have been what they are. Okay, and Blake Bortles is still not playing?
There'd be no one in the stands.
I mean, people would be, I mean, furious.
Absolutely.
Why is Blake Bortles not playing?
They were furious after 2 weeks.
Yeah.
I mean, they really were.
They were.
You know, and the thing is, Cleveland was winning. I don't know if you blame this game. I didn't see all the game. I saw a few highlights. We had Red Zone on in here along with the Jags game, but they're up 21-7 in that game. Is that Hoyer who blew the game, or is that maybe the defense?
The offense gave them nothing. I mean, the defense scored twice in that game. It was,
oh, did the defense score two of those?
The defense scored twice on a fumble from Andrew Luck and a pick six in that game. So it was a lot like the Giants game against the Jaguars, except they lost it in the end instead of finding a way to win it.
Well, that's their problem. Let him deal with it. Mm-hmm. But it's coming. It's coming sooner rather than later.
Johnny Manziel is a train wreck waiting to happen.
Hey, somebody needs to get Josh Gordon going for the fantasy playoffs. So if it's Johnny Manziel that needs to do that, somebody needs to get him going, because last week was unacceptable, Jeff Logan.
Did you think have him?
I have him in one league. I survived, in that league, I am – actually, I have him in two. I'm counting on better production out of – Mr. Gordon going forward.
Speaking of fantasy, I think I may have produced an all-time low.
Oh, no.
This week.
I don't ever tally. I usually tally the points like on Saturday.
Yeah.
To look back. Let me see who you had. You had Blake.
Yeah.
You had Reggie Bush, which I thought was a curious pick at the time. And of all weeks for Demaryius Thomas to do what he did, you may have set a new record right now.
You may have, like, 16 points.
Could Shadrick catch you? Now is the question. He's 72 points behind going into this past week. So, and JP had Breeze, who was not very good, Lynch, and Marquise Lee. So he's not exactly looking to give up his throne yet either.
No.
So there you have it. All right. We got to take a timeout. We will come back and hear from your head coach, Gus Bradley, meeting with the media in his Monday press conference yesterday. Hear some of his thoughts, and we'll get in some of your calls as well if you'd like to join us at 641-1010. Mike Dempsey, Jeff Loggeman, Fat Tony, Lauren Brooks here with you. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. Jaguars Today rolling on the white stripes. Catch hell blues. Catch the football. Put it in the end zone.
I haven't heard this song before.
You haven't heard this song before? See, I've even heard this song
before. Good.
It is good. You'd like this song.
I'm expanding horizons today.
I guess you are, Lauren Brooks.
Stripes are good.
Logman had that look. He was like,
called the white stripes?
The white stripes.
Okay.
There you go. See, I don't feel, but see, you're of my
two-man
generation.
Two-man band. Yeah, it's Jack White and what used to be his
Tommy
wife.
Stripes.
They're now separated. She plays the drums. He plays everything else.
I watched a guitar special one time. It was Jack White, the guy from Led Zeppelin, the guitarist, Jimmy Page, and then the guy from U2.
The Edge?
The Edge, the guitarist.
Right, yes, The Edge.
Way cool.
Yeah.
One of the coolest musical things that I've ever seen.
I've got an Irish cousin who's a dead ringer for The Edge, by the way. Just throwing that out there.
If you get a chance, and I can't remember what it's titled, but it was those three guys talking, guitar playing, and then playing guitar. And it's a long special.
That's pretty cool, yeah.
Was it unbelievable. Like a VH1 or one of those kind of deals?
Yeah, it was kind of one of those deals.
Yeah.
See if you can find
it. I still love, do they still do VH1 Behind the Music?
I don't know.
That series was awesome.
Yeah, I don't know.
Back
but
in the day.
That series, though, it's available on YouTube. And it's like a four-part series on YouTube.
It might get loud.
There you go.
That is a must-watch. It's unbelievable. Because, I mean, first off, nobody can hold a candle to Jimmy Page. I mean, Jimmy Page he's a god when it comes to guitar playing. And to watch the different eras, genres come together and talk playing guitar and where some of these things came from, that's one of the greatest musical things I've ever watched.
There you go. Jimmy Page is like all into the occult, too, isn't he? Did he buy Aleister Crowley's old house in England?
I don't know about it.
I'm just saying. I don't care.
But it might get loud. It
might get loud. Doesn't mean I'm going to stop listening to Zeppelin.
It might get loud as must-see.
All right.
Even for the casual music fan.
It might get loud. There you have it. Easy to find on YouTube.
Yeah.
Right? What's the total length? Can you tell?
98 minutes.
The whole thing?
Yep.
So like an hour and a half. There you go.
It's awesome.
Take an hour and a half out of your time. The only thing that's must-see right now is the series finale of Sons of Anarchy tonight. Over.
Ooh,
it's over.
Yeah, I know you're a big fan
of that. It ends tonight.
I'm a big fan of American Pickers.
Are you? I try. I watched it a little bit. I watched like the first season of American Pickers. You know,
Frank and Mike?
Yeah, where they go, it's like pull up on somebody's garage or make it look like they're just pulling up on somebody's garage. I think a lot of that stuff is all staged, but whatever, you know.
Well, I think some of it is, some of the commentary, but the actual fines and all that, at least they
that's an interesting that show. I'd like them to come just clean out my garage.
But. I like it just because you get to learn a lot of the history. You know, and it's pretty cool to see how things used to be made. To last multiple lifetimes compared to the things of today.
Right.
That, you know, are just basically throwaway items for the most part. It's fun looking at some of the old stuff and how they repurpose some of the things. I dig that stuff.
You're learning more about Jeff Logman, ladies and gentlemen, today. We like that. A little behind the scenes.
See, I'm
with Loggy.
You know, my two favorite television shows, I mean, Deadliest Catch, those guys on Discovery Channel.
Of course.
The Crabbers.
Right. That's a good show. I like Deadliest Catch.
And then American Pickers.
American Pickers. Interesting.
And NFL football. That's good. I'm good.
Right.
I'm good on television.
Outside of sport, I mean, I have my drama series that I watch, but damn if there's anyone who watches more Ancient Aliens than me. I don't know who it is on History 2. History 2 is probably my other than, like, my channels are like ESPN, other than the networks, if something, you know, sports related is on it, ESPN, FX, AMC, History 2. That's it. That's where I live on the television box. All right, let's get to Gus Bradley, head coach of the Jags, talking about how the game went and missing some opportunities in the second half of this contest.
I really believe going in this game that I did. We felt really good about it as a team. Kind of that, hey, some good things took place last week. Let's build on this momentum. Let's take it into the game and see what happens. And, you know, I think that for the most part we did in the first half. Then in the second half, we just, we missed the opportunity.
No, they really did. And it was, again, a tale of two halves for this Jacksonville Jaguars team. Couldn't get it done in the second half, and Gus followed that comment up with talking about he puts it on himself. He needs to do a better job getting these guys ready.
There's something that I could have done. I need to take responsibility for some of this. If we didn't come out in the second half and play like we're capable of playing, I have to take responsibility for some of that as well. And I need to do a better job of getting our guys ready to go and realize the importance of capturing this and continuing that. It is a full 60-minute game.
Jeff, I hear this a lot about all kinds of football teams. We always hear this a lot. Everyone does. Second half adjustments or halftime adjustments for the second half. In reality, you're in that locker room, at halftime. How much of that is going on? How much coaching is going on? How much is guys just getting retaped, getting a breather? What is the environment like, and how many real adjustments are you talking about at a halftime in the NFL?
Well, it's not, you don't wait until halftime to make adjustments. I mean, adjustments are made throughout the course of the game. I mean, if you're an offensive coordinator, you're trying to adjust, okay, what coverages are they playing us with? And then you say, okay, if they're playing this, then we can start calling this percentage mix of plays. If you're a defensive coach and they're coming out with a trap game like the Houston Texans did, which they hadn't shown a lot of, you've got to be on the sideline to coach your players up. Say, hey, look, if they're running this trap as the defensive tackle, you need to be able to do this so that our linebackers can do this. I mean, it's a constant adjustment throughout the game. Way too much is made about halftime itself. Like something magical happens at halftime where they go in and they completely dramatically change a gameplay. That doesn't happen.
Well,
it happens throughout the game.
I think, well, though, people look and say, well, all right, it's 13-10 in the first half. And it was, you know, your typical NFL game. It's back and forth, you know, having some success. The other team's having some success. You come out in the second half. One team has all the success in the second half. One team has none. And the perception is they did a better job making adjustments. Maybe it's not specifically at that moment, but the idea, I think, in fans' minds, listeners' minds, everyone's all together at the same time. You're a captive audience. You don't have, you know, you're not half the guys aren't out on the field. You can maybe go over two or three key principles that you need to do better at in the second half, or here's something they're doing. You're saying there's not a lot of chalkboard stuff, whiteboard work going on in the second half.
When you go in at halftime and you're breaking up offense, defense, you know, and you've got maybe, I mean, by the time you get kind of hydrated, retaped, whatever it is you have to do, equipment adjustments or whatever, you've got maybe 5 to 8 minutes with a coordinator to where you go over certain things, key talking points. Hey, look, guys, this is what they're really hurting us at. Here's why it's hurting us. Let's just go ahead and make sure that we take care of this. You know, but it's not like all of a sudden you're changing game plans at halftime. You're just changing maybe some of the calls and coaching guys up on calls that aren't being executed properly. So it's not a crazy thing where all of a sudden it's a complete game plan change. It's just adjustments. But like I said, those things happen throughout the course of the game. They happen on the sideline when you've got the surfaces and you're showing pictures, still pictures of formations or something maybe that you haven't seen, a play that you haven't seen, telling guys why it's gashing us. You know, perfect example, the 51-yard run by Arian Foster. Okay. Why did that happen? We got to coach it up. We got to change it up, right? No. You had the perfect call play. You know, the play was fine. The call was fine. The execution was wrong. Jonathan Cyprien comes down to be the eighth guy in the box. He's got to keep his right arm free because he's got a wide receiver trying to crack him in that box area. He takes the block on perfectly, keeping his one arm free, but the problem is he paid too much attention to the wide receiver, and then Arian Foster ran right by his arm that was free. So that's just execution. That's not changing the game plan.
Right. He's got to do a better job individually getting off a block at that point in time.
Or just disregarding the block and going to the ball carrier.
Okay.
You know.
Let's jump ahead here to morale. Toby Gerhart made some comments basically that morale is down right now because they're not winning enough games. We'll hear what Gus had to say. Does he think morale is down in the Jaguar locker room?
I wouldn't say it's morale. I just say guys were frustrated because, you know, again, it felt like everything was the momentum of last week going into the halftime. You know, everything was going and then it didn't work out our way. So I think it's, you know, disappointment, frustration. I would say that was felt in the locker room without a doubt.
Gus followed that up later talking specifically about Toby Gerhart and that he understands how frustrated he may be right now.
Toby, he's unbelievable now. What I would say for him is what's important to him is he wants to contribute. He really likes his team, likes being a part of it, and wants to contribute to it. And when you don't get a chance to contribute, sometimes frustration comes in. And I get that. I get that with him.
What's your take on just the morale of this football team?
Yeah, I think morale is... I don't know if the choice of words by Toby were wrong, but I get his point. I mean, when you're 2-11 and you just lost a football game that you had the lead at halftime, it's disappointing.
You're not happy.
No. You know, I mean, morale, you know, hey, look, it was an emotional game. We're disappointed. You know, using the term morale, you know, does that make it that much different? I don't have a problem with what Toby said. Not at all.
Morale, I think, strikes people as, man, we got no chance but I think here. You know what I mean?
Well, I think morale is a broad statement overall. It's about the whole year and about the emotional state of the team as a whole. I don't see that. Because you know what, if that were the case, if morale were low as a state of being for the whole team, then how do you go in at halftime against the New York Giants when you haven't played very well and then come out and play exceptionally well? It's not a sign of a team that has low morale.
Right. So that's a good point. Certainly last week that would be an indication. It was weird how this game was like the mirror opposite of it, right? I mean, the way the second half with the long drive, just like the first half last week.
Well, and if the reality is that you had your first three offensive possessions in that game, you did nothing with. I mean, first one, you're like six plays and punt. Texans take it down or execute a very long drive, which is hard to do. And they do a lot with the legs of Arian Foster. They score a touchdown. Your second drive, you throw a pick, and it's obviously in minus territory or plus territory for the Houston Texans. They got the ball, I think, at the 26 after the interception. They're able to take that in for a touchdown. It's okay, so now let's answer them, right? Well, you got a second and 10 on your next possession, and Cecil Shorts drops that ball, which could have been a 20-plus yard gain.
Right.
And all of a sudden, maybe that changes the dynamic. You close it to, you know, a one-possession game. You're not able to do that. The Houston Texans turn around and answer that with a field goal. You know, so that's not morale. That's execution.
Gus asked about the lack of offensive production, two TDs in the last three games. How much of it is due to the lack of explosive plays?
You're always looking for explosive plays. It just helps you. You know, there's some. I think that when you're in situations like this, you feel like it's you want to point out things that keep you from scoring. And I think we all need to take a good look at, you know, Clay Harbor had the one, he got hit, it was on the 11-yard line, first and 10 on the 11, you know, after an explosive play, you know, but he took a big hit, and thankfully he's okay. But those plays like that, when they do come your way, you got to make them. And, you know, just like some of our drops that we had, you're really looking for those explosive plays. And when they show up, you got to take advantage of them. And we did on some. Marquise's play on our sideline was a fantastic play. Unbelievable play. So we're doing it on some occasion. We just need to do it more consistently.
And it's been a problem for this team to this point this season, the second half. It started in week one, but the collapses in the second half continued this week. Does he have any explanation for why they are occurring?
That's right. No, that's right. I have to take a look at myself and see, you know, what's going on, why we're doing this. And, you know, if we're a team that is momentum a little bit based, then in the second half, if things don't go our way, what happens? And that's why, you know, we don't like to talk much about it. You're trying to find out our personality, who we are. And, you know, we hope to build on that. But it's a great question. Why do some things happen? Why do we have drops? Why do we, you know, not get in on a fourth or third and one sneak? You know, it looks like we've got an opportunity to get it. Why these things happen, I think we're going to make them happen ourselves.
And finally, Gus Bradley weighing in on his quarterback, Blake Bortles. How did he think he played this week?
I thought he did some good things. You know, he made some really good throws yesterday. I thought he had that freedom, you know, that was back into his game and did some good things there. I know on his zone reads, he was really good on that as far as reading his keys. You know, avoided sacks like we asked him to do.
And, you know, overall, Gus mentioned that after the game as well. He thought that the film would show that he dealt pretty well with pressure. Do you agree with that, or that he has some issues with that?
I thought he dealt well with it at times, but there were times that I thought that he didn't. You know, I was talking earlier about how he ran up through the pocket trying to run with it instead
right.
of maybe staying in there and finding a guy that was open. Probably a little quick. In a few instances, one play also he had pressure, had an errant throw, really kind of changed his body motion on that throw to avoid the hit. But, you know, quarterbacks do that. It's not a sign of being scared or any kind of flinching in the pocket. But, I mean, he could have been better. I don't think he was great. I wouldn't agree totally with what Gus said there.
Okay.
I think he can be better.
Do you need, as a head coach, you haven't been a head coach, but you've been around football plenty. Do you need to make sure you're propping up the confidence of your quarterback? Is that
a young quarterback? Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I mean,
you're looking to accentuate the positive at least, right?
Well, you're trying to accentuate the positive for a young player. You know, because you know what? When we had Blake in here last week, did you get the kind of the impression that Blake thought that he knew what he was getting into, but then realized, wow, I'm really overwhelmed.
Like you mentioned earlier, you said, oh, I watch it on TV. I'm like, I could do that. I could beat this guy. I can make that throw. And he said, you come in and you don't realize the mental side of the game. You're going from, you know, algebra to calculus, basically, in terms of the complexity of what you're being asked to do.
Yeah, and it's, you know, it's a little overwhelming. I'm sure that he's overwhelmed, and I'm sure that, you know, at the end of the season, once that last game is over with, he's going to take a deep breath and say, you know what, I just need a little time away. But you know, don't you get the impression that when you talk to him that he can't wait for the opportunity to get better? I mean, that's the thing that you really kind of identify with Blake is the competitiveness that he has, and that he gets angry at certain throws that don't happen or go his way because he knows that he can be better, and he knows that he can be better, and he knows that he's learning. You know, the opposite is the part that I didn't like about Blaine Gabbert and I didn't like about Byron Leftwich is they felt that they had it. You know, and with Blake, you know that he is, and he's the first one to say, I've got a long way to go.
You think Byron thought he had it?
He thought he should have been Pro Bowl.
To me, the most frequently repeated line I've ever heard from Byron Leftwich, and I heard it many times, y'all know how good I am when I'm healthy. Y'all know how good I am. I love that, man. Oh, Byron. If you don't believe in yourself, Byron, no one will, all right? We'll come back. We'll take a look at the Tom Bush Family of Dealerships fan feedback spotlight today, asking you, Heisman finalists. Uh-oh, that means we're turning our eye towards the future here. Marcus Mariota, Melvin Gordon, and, of course, Amari Cooper out of Alabama. Which one would help the Jags most in 2015? Your thoughts on that coming up on 1010XL 92.5 FM. We were deep into Ancient Aliens there on the break. It was very interesting. A lot of support on Twitter for Ancient Aliens, by the way, as well as American Kickers. Very popular programming right there.
Right.
Much like Jaguars today. Mike Dempsey, Jeff Loggeman, Fat Tony, Warren Brooks here with you. Glad you are along on this Tuesday, going to class with Loggy, as we do every week, breaking down the film. Today, Fan Feedback Spotlight asked you which of these players, and obviously, I mean, most people would not opt for the quarterback option because you feel like you've got your franchise quarterback, but they just announced the Heisman finalist yesterday, Marcus Mariota of Oregon.
Is it Mariota or Mariota?
Mariota, yeah,
okay.
I know. It's annoying because we always said Mariota for you. It's like Jadeveon. It's not Jadeveon, Clowney. It's Jadeveon.
Jadeveon.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It's like, you know, the Bears receiver, Marquess.
Yeah, Marcus.
Marquise. I don't know. I don't know what to tell you. It's like Manziel. It should be Manziel, but what can I tell you? You had Melvin Gordon of Wisconsin, who, by the way, got shut down this week, but had a tremendous year. And what is he still within striking distance of Barry Sanders? Is it his career record or season record for yards? He needs like 250 in the bowl game, something like that.
I'm not sure. I'd have to look at the...
I saw something, Gordon within some 250 yards or whatever it is of Barry Sanders' record. And, of course, Amari Cooper, who got in it started out, of course, with Todd Gurley, right, Tony? We got tons of Jags need to draft Todd Gurley. Torn ACL for Todd Gurley.
Okay.
Right? So he'll be, don't know what the timetable exactly would
and
be.
And what year is he at Georgia?
Junior.
Okay.
I believe. So he'll be coming out next year. I mean, you would expect.
Maybe, maybe not. I mean, maybe, with an ACL, he may be better served to come back.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, it seems like the ACL doesn't scare teams off as much.
Well, it'll scare them off, though, now.
It could.
I mean, you got the perfect example in Aaron Colvin right here, who was projected to be late first, second-round pick,
certainly,
the fourth round.
Certainly. I mean, and there are examples of it where, yeah, you can go back to Willis McGahee. Oh, you know, I mean, I know that's going back a ways, but Buffalo took him in the first round and basically redshirted him for a year. So I guess it depends on how, you know, valuable you think he'd be.
Well, and the other thing is what's most fresh in personnel guys' minds? The one that's probably the freshest in everybody's mind is the running back from South Carolina that just basically retired from the 49ers.
Right. Right. Different than
he had a major injury.
Right. He was so much more extensive than just your basic ACL. But anyway, we were getting a lot of Gurley. it's become quite fashionable to tweet at us and demand Amari Cooper, Dom the Teal, and Gold, and that's fine.
He's a great player.
So we asked folks just that. What would you rather have, or who would help the Jags most? What do we get, Tony?
Here's what we got from at Irish Jaguar. Cooper probably, though we won't draft the wide receiver that high. There's more of a chance of drafting Gordon in round number two. From Robbie Cooper, he's an immediate game changer and has deep threat capability. Then release CS3. Hashtag bye, Felicia. From Cam, we got Cooper without a doubt. When we let CS3 walk, Cooper, A. Robin Lee will make Bortles' life that much easier. From Eric Gordon, a stud running back would help us grind out some wins late in games once the O starts to come together. From Mike, it doesn't even matter because the Jaguars have the true legend, Blake Bortles. From Kevin, we got Mariota. Because if teams are in need of a quarterback, they will trade with us, and we can get more picks. Hashtag hope.
Yeah, I thought that was an interesting way of looking at it. Right now, I want to say, what would it be? The Jags are the third pick in the draft based on actually, Tennessee, despite the fact that they beat the Jags, are ahead of them with the same record because it's a multi-team tiebreaker. But that will likely settle itself next week.
Still got 3 weeks to go.
Right, there's still 3 weeks to go.
And you got one head-to-head matchup with the Titans.
Correct, which we were discussing earlier off the air. Almost as much as you can have for a two-win team this late in the year, kind of a must-win, right? I mean, that's a team you should beat at this point. With Mettenberger hurt now, he became their quarterback of choice. Locker didn't play well at all. Looks like they're going to part ways with him. They lost Justin Hunter, lacerated spleen. Kendall Wright just broke a bone in his hand, didn't play this week. Maybe he'll be able to go, maybe not. So you're, you know, they're as short on offensive playmakers as anybody, and probably the worst team stopping the run in the NFL.
And right which now. Team would you rather have?
Which team would I rather have?
If Mike Dempsey is a coach, okay, or general manager, and you've got an opportunity, the Titans are talking to you, and the Jaguars are talking to you, and you get to pick the job. Money's even.
Well, I'm going to pick Jacksonville because my hope is that they've got the right quarterback.
Okay.
I mean, that to me is the most important aspect of what you're looking for. What about you?
I take the Jaguars all day long.
Is it because of the quarterback or is it because of the overall?
I think it's overall.
Yeah.
I think the overall young talent that Dave Caldwell has assembled so far here, I'd take this job.
Now, that being said, when healthy, Hunter's got a ton of potential. He hasn't fulfilled it yet, but he does have, I mean, we've seen flashes of that. Kendall Wright was a 90-plus catch guy last year. He's a decent player.
Yeah, but he's averaging like, you know, 8, 9, 10 yards a catch.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean, where's the explosiveness in his game? Delanie Walker's a good player. I'm just saying, they've got some talent. They've got some talent on the offensive line as well. They certainly got issues on defense.
They spent on it and they drafted it.
Understood, but dang, they have it, right? Yeah. And that's what you do. You allocate your money somewhere. The Tom Bush family of dealerships brings you the fan feedback spotlight every day. Jeff, what do you think about I know you're open to the idea of Amari Cooper coming on down.
Well, I don't watch a lot of college football, but obviously the Alabama Crimson Tide is a team that you can't help but seeing if you're just anywhere around a TV on a Saturday. He's a fantastic player. I mean, he is. He reminds me a lot of Anquan Boldin, but with better speed.
Right. They say he doesn't have that top end speed. You know, like some guy. He's not going to blow you away with his 40, but that he does pretty much everything well. He certainly appears to be a game breaker when you watch him. I don't know how fast you need to be because he's run away from a lot of secondaries.
All right. Now let me ask you this: if you had ignore what has happened this season,
okay,
Sammy Watkins and Cooper.
I like Sammy Watkins.
Okay.
I do.
What about you? Cooper's size.
What about you?
To me, I think, let me ask you this. Okay, how about Evans? Put those three in there.
Right now, I might say Mike Evans at the top of that list.
I like Mike Evans better than Sammy Watkins.
Oh, let me ask you this, though. Odell Beckham Jr. and all these guys. Odell Beckham Jr. has 49 catches in the last 6 weeks, which is the most ever for any rookie ever in a six-week run.
Yeah, he's been tremendous.
He's got dynamic athleticism, knows for the end zone.
That's a great question. I mean, that's an interesting question.
How about this? Allen Robinson and Marquise Lee will take those two. Okay.
Yeah. We got them. We'll take both of them. We already got
them. They're here. You can head on over to Tom Butch Volkswagen on Atlantic. See for yourself the 2015 Motor Trend Car of the Year, the Volkswagen Golf. Take advantage of the sign and drive event. Zero due at signing, zero down, zero first month's payment, and zero deposit. Or take advantage of the BMW's holiday credit of up to $3,500 or drive away in a 2015 BMW X1 S-Drive or 2015 BMW 3201 for only $279 a month for a 39-month lease. You can log on to TomBush.com for those and other great incentives from Mazda and Mini as well in this holiday season. Jeff, final thought for you. Baltimore, pretty daunting task right now for this Jaguar team, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, this is a tough matchup now because the strength of the Ravens team offensively is Joe Flacco. And even though the Torrey Smith has been hobbled with a little bit of a knee injury, they've been running the ball very well. Gary Kubiak now is the offensive coordinator, so it's a little bit of that Texans offense, run the ball, play action. But Joe Flacco in the last 5-6 weeks, he's been playing tremendous. You know, they actually have, and to me, this is the perfect type of offense for Blake Bortles. He has 5 wide receivers, I believe, that have over a 14-yard catch average on that offense. 5. I mean, typically, if you have 1 or 2, you think you're doing pretty good. He's got 5.
Like to throw it downfield.
He loves to throw it downfield, and Flacco's accurate. He throws a very good deep ball.
Flacco's in the conversation for strongest arm in the NFL.
Very strong arm, but you know, he's got great touch on deep balls, and I think that this quarterback here, Blake Bortles, does some of that.
By the way.
And I think in the future, when you get things settled down up front, I think that the offense needs to be tailored to his ability to throw the ball down the field more. Now the Ravens on defense, Dumerville, Suggs, Sam Young, Jokel, going to be a great test this week.
We're going to find out.
It's going to be a great test.
If you wanted to see the master class, by the way, Aaron Rodgers put it on last night.
Oh, he's tremendous.
I mean, moving in the pocket, the darts he's thrown, and then the 60-yarder to Jordy Nelson.
Beautiful throw.
What
a great route.
Oh, it was great. It was a funky little head fake he threw on him.
The head turn, that little head turn,
right,
was the key.
It certainly made them bite to the outside. He cut it back to the inside. And, I mean, on a dead sprint, Rodgers, probably 55 yards in the air, on a dime, never slowed, never hesitated, just rolled right in the end zone. That was as pretty of a throw as you'll see.
That was a beautiful throw. Hey, by the way, this week we'll get to see the one Jaguar that I think should still be in a Jaguar uniform, former Jaguar.
Darryl Smith.
Yep.
We've been
playing well for them.
Unfortunately, beating that drum for a while now, but
he still plays well.
He's playing very well for them. So where are we going to see you this week and hear you?
Let's see. Film Room Friday coming up. Jaguars.com. Outdoor show Saturday morning, 7 to 10, and then
Gus Bradley show.
Gus Bradley show Saturday night and Sunday morning. Pre-game show Sunday morning. Pre-game show radio game day.
Gus Bradley show.